All right, what do you think? We should get started. I know it's a little bit past the hour. Good morning, everybody. Nice to see a full room. I believe if I looked at the program correctly, we're competing against something called Moody Bitches, so I'm thrilled that you all showed up here today. I'm like, wait a minute, I need to go over to that session. Okay. Good morning, and welcome to Motivating and Influencing Others to Impact Social Good. So you all chose the positive side of the morning, so I appreciate that very much. My name is Maya Germain, and I am your host today, so I'm only here for a few moments, but I'm thrilled to be the host for three reasons. The first, and probably the most, you'll understand in a second, the most important is that I'm representing State Street. And State Street is the presenting sponsor of today's conference, and we're thrilled to be here. We have brought with us 1,900 of our Massachusetts employees, as well as some community partners who hopefully you'll have a chance to visit down at our booth. So again, first reason I'm happy to be here is because I'm representing State Street. The second reason that I'm happy to be here is actually I represent corporate citizenship within State Street. And that's the group within the organization that's focused on the strategy around how do we deepen the impact of the efforts that we make in the community and through all of the resources that are available to us. And some of those resources, and probably the most impactful, are employees, right? So all of you represent employees probably at firms or soon to be ones. So you're a really, really important piece of how to deepen the impact. But at State Street, in our corporate citizenship division and our foundation has a strategy focused on workforce readiness and education. And we spend about $20 million per year in that endeavor, and hopefully you'll have a chance to pop down to our community connection. If you haven't seen it yet, it's right at the bottom of the stairs. We actually are showcasing our Workforce Investment Network program that we've launched this year. It's Boston Wins. And why Boston Wins is because we've brought together five amazingly impactful nonprofit organizations to partner with State Street to really help improve that workforce readiness and education for the Boston students that surround us. So really thrilled to be showcasing that, and so hopefully please do stop by our booth and learn about those organizations. And then the third piece, which is most directly tied to why we're here today, is State Street has an employee engagement platform called GIVE. It's giving, investing, volunteering by employees. I'm responsible for that program, so I'm here today representing that. And it's really, if you think about why we're here today, it's about choice. State Street moved from a directive giving campaign to one where we say to our employees, what means the most to you? Where do you choose to dedicate your time and your resources? And as an employee of State Street, so taking my corporate hat off for a moment and just being an employee, I'm personally, just like all of you who are here today, very committed to deepening the impact in the community. I personally focus on work-life progress, education, and also cancer research and treatment. I do that through volunteering, through board service, and through fundraising. So just like all of you, I'm thrilled to be here to learn from our amazing panel today about some how are we going to actually take some practical advice on how to rally people around this. You know, it's your heart that's speaking to you, but how do you get other people to understand that passion as well? So I'm looking forward to being inspired, so I'm going to make sure I turn it over to the folks that are going to do that for us. Please help me welcome our facilitator for today's session, Steve Gross. Steve has the best title of any job I've ever heard. It is the Chief Playmaker and head of the Life is Good Foundation. And I was asked to actually read his bio to you, and you'll understand why in just a moment. So excuse me reading it. I couldn't memorize the whole thing, although when I read it the first time, I was completely moved. So Steve Gross is the founder and chief playmaker of the Life is Good Kids Foundation, a 501c3 public charity. He has devoted his career to the service of our most vulnerable children, a pioneer in utilizing exuberant, joyful play to promote resiliency in children and their caregivers, and a leader in the field of psychological trauma response. Gross is committed to the healthy development of children facing the most challenging circumstances. The vision of the nonprofit he founded is a world where all children grow up feeling safe, loved, and joyful. And if you spend 2 minutes with Steve, you'll know that he just embodies that all day, every day. In order to make this vision a reality, the Life is Good Playmakers partner with frontline professionals such as teachers, social workers, and child life specialists who dedicate their lives to helping children overcome poverty, violence, and illness. The Playmakers use the power of play to build healing, life-changing relationships with the children in their care. This foundation of playfulness allows children to engage in the world with passion and joy while giving them courage and creativity to see the possibilities and solutions in the face of adversity. Says a lot, doesn't it? So help me welcome Steve with a big round of applause.
Thank you. Thanks so much. All right. This is going to be awesome. Feel really privileged to be able to be on a panel with right now three, but hopefully there'll be a fourth.
Fourth.
What's up? Craig, how are you? We got a seat right here for you if this one works.
That was perfect.
I mean, you can take my seat if you want it. Thanks, Craig. With four amazing women who dedicate so much time to changing the world. So I am with a little crew out of Boston right down the street called Life is Good. Has anyone heard of Life is Good? All right. Cool. And if somebody asks you, and let's keep it real, we're going to keep it real in this session. If someone said, like, hey, what's this Life is Good company? What do they do? What would you tell them? They make T-shirts. Yeah. They make T-shirts. They make other shirts. Like, I'm wearing a Life is Good shirt right now. I got a Life is Good shirt underneath it. I got some Life is Good socks on. I know this workshop is not going to go well enough to warrant me showing you my Life is Good boxer shorts, but I have those as well. But here's the deal. We are not at Life is Good in the T-shirt business. That's not the business that we've chosen. That's not what we are passionate about. We are in the spreading the power of optimism business. T-shirt is a vehicle. It is one way in which you can achieve your fullness, your greatness, your mission in the world. So when you think about spreading the power of optimism, and just a second on optimism, because I think sometimes when folks think of optimism, they think of this almost like blind optimism that, hey, everything's going to work out great. I'm an optimist. The future's going to be bright. I'm an optimist. I'm going to ignore all the negative stuff in the world because I'm an optimist. That is not what true optimism is about. Optimism is about being able to, first and foremost, to see the best in yourself. And then once you can do that, then you can see the best in other people. And then once you can do that, you can see the best in your situation or your circumstances, no matter how challenging, painful, sad, or difficult those situations and circumstances are. It's about being able to not only to see the good, but to be able to focus on it, even when the more difficult stuff tries to blind us. And we got four incredible women here who are all about growing the good. I wanted to take just 1 minute before we kick in, and I'm going to be super brief, but in South Africa, in the Zulu language, when you say hello to somebody, the greeting is sawubona. Anybody know what that means? I see you. Part of that growing the good, part of what this is all about, when you think about social, the aggregate, the connection, the community, and good, the desired outcome, it's really about how do we help to allow people to achieve desired outcomes. And the first thing that we got to do is to be able to see each other. And so what I found sometimes, like when I get up to talk, I'm always like super nervous, believe it. Like I have a lot of nervous energy right now. I'm trying not to look nervous. That's why I wear the hat. So I like, oh, he's cool. Yeah, no, I'm nervous. So what happens is the only way that I've learned to become unnervous is to look at somebody, to see them, to smile, and sometimes even just make a little contact. Maybe just offer a fist bump. What's going on? How you doing? What's happening? Good to see you. Pleasure. My beautiful panel right up here. What's going on? Greg, nice to meet you. So when we make connections, it changes our physiology. It changes our brain. It changes how we see ourselves and we see others. So what I'd like to do, if it's cool with y'all, and by the way, it's just an invitation. You can sit down. But I was going to put on like a little bit of music, like just a little bit of music. And then I thought I would invite you all, if you wanted to look around the room. You could get up if you wanted, you could move, you could look around the room. And let's just say, hypothetically, you saw somebody. You could smile at them. If you want to, you could smile at them. And then if they smile back, you know, you could extend a little fist bump and just see them. Make at least one or two connections. Now, if you want to just chill and sit at your seat, maybe somebody will come on over to you, okay? But let's take 2 minutes just to see each other for a little bit. Because social good begins with seeing each other. And no social good ever takes place if we don't see each other. So I'm going to put some music on for my man Michael Franti. And just give us a minute to connect, if you want to. I know I'm going to take that minute.
Every day is not Valentine's, but you make it feel like most of the time. When I'm all alone with you, picking up pieces of my life. Sometimes there's ones I just can't find, but they found a home with you. Whoa, I'm not afraid to be alone, but being alone is better with you. Life is better with you. Whoa, whoa, life is better with you. Whoa, life is better with you. And when I think about the things that we've been through, I know just one thing is true. Life is better with you. Some days are better than other days, but these days, life is better with you. Some days are better than other days, but these days, life is better with you. Life is better. Tell me what you want, I'll give you all that you need with my heart. Saying please, baby, please, because nobody does that thing you do better than you. And thoughts to swim around in my head, for all the words that we ever said, my favorites remain, I love you. Whoa, I'm not afraid to be alone, but being alone is better with you. Life is better with you. Whoa, whoa,
I'll be okay. All right, everybody. Yeah, I know we could have done that all day. It's never about perfection. It's always about connection. You cool with that?
Yeah.
All right. So we are going to try. We got so much to cover in a short time that we have a little egg timer here. What's going to happen, the format for today, is we got four amazing stories. I get to ask some questions. You all will get to ask some questions too. But we only have about 9 minutes each. So we're going to do it one at a time. 9 minutes. We'll set the little egg timer. When it goes off, we'll transition and we'll go to our next speaker.
Speed dating.
Yeah, kind of like, and we're not going to do super, super long intros because we want folks to be able to dive into the subject matter. Okay? And I'm going to be looking. I got some extensive notes because it's amazing to try to keep up with the great things that this panel has done. So we're going to start with Connie Weaver. And Connie is, and I'm just going to, you know, she's a marketing guru. And she has done a lot of this work with TIAA CREF. And what's amazing about TIAA CREF, and one of the things that I didn't know about TIAA-CREF. TIAA-CREF.
I know, we're working on that.
Yeah, please. I mean, marketing. It's marketing. I can't pronounce it. But that's just me. But it's really all about how do you help people achieve their financial goals, and not just people, but mostly the people that are in the service of helping and giving back to others.
Right.
People who are in academic, medical, cultural communities, healthcare. So what I wanted to start off was, like, isn't that kind of enough? Like, if you work for an organization that's focus is around social mission and helping people, what could be more important than helping people achieve their financial goals so that they can live a good life? Isn't that enough? Why do you have to go outside to do kind of more social good?
Well, I think that, first of all, I think it gets back to who you are as a person. And one of the cool things about working at TIAA CREF is that TIAA CREF was, I'm just going to give you a little minute of background, because we're a Fortune 100 company with a brand name that, you know, isn't exactly a household word. But to the people we serve, it means a lot, because we were founded by Andrew Carnegie almost 100 years ago. And we were founded because he noticed that educators, teachers, it's specifically at Cornell, He's looking at these educators, and they're paid like clerks. And when it came time to retire, they had nothing. They lived in poverty. And there was something wrong about that equation. So he created what became this country's first major retirement fund and actually invented the annuity before it was a curse word. It's actually a good thing. So if you think about what that meant about creating a sense of financial well-being, a sense of security for people who spent their lives giving to others. And so when I talk about, when you're a recruiter, when you talk about our company and you ask people why they come here because they want to make an impact. And they can make an impact every single day. So let me give you an example. Can I give you an example?
Please,
not to
please,
take over the questioning please. Or anything.
But no, please.
So I have some friends in the audience with me. Liz and Sue. Waved everybody.
Liz and Sue.
You get to be part of this.
Can you guys stand up? Stand up for just a quick second, Liz and Sue.
And so
Liz and Sue, everybody.
Yeah. Liz and Sue. And you're going to want to meet them because a couple of years ago, being all women in the room, let me ask two questions first. How many of you have student loans and student debt and came out into the workforce? Because the average person comes out with about $30,000 in debt, okay? So in a low interest rate environment like we live in today, that kind of puts you in an interesting spot for a starting point, right? So we think a lot about folks like you. We also think a lot about women. Hey, we're all women. 26% of women, only 26% are confident with investment decisions. And what does that mean? That means we control so much of the disposable income in this country, and more of that will be happening. But when it comes to making investment decisions, we cower away. We're just not confident. So a lot of this gets into how do you feel? How do you create confidence in not only making critical decisions, and in many cases, balancing home, family, work, all the kinds of things you care about outside, but also dealing with your own financial well-being. We tend to put ourselves last. So we started a little program a couple of years ago, and my friends were integral to starting that program. We made it a little Skunk Works off to the side. And we went out and created a little workshop called Pay It Forward. And we crossed generations and we brought folks together in a very experiential way, women, and started to have the conversation about solving problems. It wasn't about walking in and hearing terms like, did you diversify your portfolio and this, that, and the other, which, by the way, I will tell you, words matter. They make people shut down. And as a result of that now, it became a movement. And over 4 years, that movement has over 10,000 women who have gone through the workshop. We now have a website around it. But here's the thing. Here's the big thing. Because while we were created to serve, we always like to say create to serve and built to perform, because it is about outcomes. And we are seeing that the women that go through the workshop, over 40% of them actually sign up and go get advice, get help, because the best thing you can do is get advice. But more importantly, over 70% of them have taken action. And today, those women are saving at a level that's twice the average of the people that we see across the millions and millions that we serve. So the empowerment, and that came as part of a movement that in the employees started as a Skunk Work, adopted, took broad, partnered with many nonprofit organizations to bring to life, and then took it inside the company, and Sue is one of the leaders of the groups inside the company empowering women, and as a result of that, it's a movement. So that to me is power, and that to me is giving back, and you can give back every day in what you do, and you can give back in what you do outside.
Cool.
So, but it's cool.
So it sounds like, you know, kind of what I'm hearing too is that when you think about social good and the movement of social good, that there's almost like an internal and external. You can go outside of the realm of your work and your organization and you can do social good. But there's also this piece where every day when you go to work and do the thing that you do and that you love to do, you can focus internally on creating social good and using your strengths. So I have another question for you. I have a bunch and I just want to make sure.
But I know the ticker's
going. I know, but you can't hear that, can you? Because I can't.
No, but
okay,
I can
good.
See it.
All right. So What are like one or two things that folks who say to themselves, like, hey, you know what, I really want to do more. I want to do more social good. I want to make, is there anyone here like right now that's saying like, I just want to make a bigger impact? Anyone who's in here? Cool. Just want to make a bigger impact. So that awareness, that desire, you know, which yields intention is perfect. But if you could give them some advice around one or two things that they could do right away to get on that path of doing more social good, what would your advice be?
So that's a big question. Oops.
No, that's no. That's it's a faulty timer. We still have 2 minutes left.
Okay. So that's a 2 minute warning.
That's a 2 minute
warning.
So
I get up. What motivates me? I get up every single day wanting to make a difference. And you can, difference makers can happen in so many different ways. It can happen in the job that you do, in the people that you motivate, in the people that you help, and most importantly, in the way you make people feel. And there are moments that matter to each and every one of us every single day. There are little things we can do in the way we maybe give someone advice or help a colleague, or there are bigger things you can do when you go out and do what I've done is become go on the board of a number of nonprofits. But the most important thing for me is the ability to really make a difference. It's not a, you know, we all, you know, give dollars, give funds, things like that, but that's not what gets me excited. What gets me excited is being able to go in and bring the talents and the skills together with myself, with others. And again, whether this is on the job or out of the job, and just beginning, you know, use your hands, get something done. Actually see people benefit from the work that you do. See how people feel. And so I would say my greatest piece of advice is find a passion, because you got to be passionate about what. Find a passion. And it could be a little thing, like having a friend who's at work who doesn't quite know how to come out of their shell and helping them become engaged. You're doing good. Or getting on a committee. I mean, frankly, in many nonprofits, the coolest and best work is done in the committee. And you get on a committee where you actually get things done. I've been on a couple of them, actually led a couple of them, where I'll bring together experts, you know, people like me in marketing, where an organization really needs help in that area, and you bring them together and you get them working. Before you know it, you have a new marketing department that partners with the organization because you bring time and talent,
cool,
as well as raising money. But there are so many little things you can do every single day. It starts, though, with really understanding what motivates you, but most importantly, recognize what you do and the way it makes you and others feel is so much a part of deriving results.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you very much, Connie. You know, it's brilliant, and Connie, if you don't mind switching with Lindsay.
How about?
And while we're switching, you know, it reminds me when we have a team in Haiti, and when we sit together after we meet, and we make a circle and we hold hands. And when we hold hands, we ask that one hand is facing palm up and the other hand is facing palm down. And we make our circle and our hands are like this for a reason. The hand that is palm up represents our receiving hand. It means, what are we getting from this? We always, to be part of a community, you have to be getting from your community. The palm down is the giving hand. And what we say here symbolically is that to be part of a community, to be part of a movement of social good, you need to be prepared to give to that community and to receive from that community. If you're just giving, you become depleted. If you're just receiving, you become weighted down and burdened and bloated. And it's this beautiful balance of making sure that in that you're doing what you love to do, you're doing what you feel passionate about, and feeling that it is making a difference. Thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you.
All right. We are going to shift gears. We are going to shift gears to a very good new friend of mine, Lindsay Riley from Lindsay Tia.
What's going on?
What's up, girl? All right. And Lindsay, and I had a little bio, but Lindsay designs bags. But each bag has its own distinct personality. Yeah.
I love that.
And that those bags are about inspiring and encouraging bravery while empowering other people. That she turned her passion as a little girl sewing and making handbags into a way to change the world one handbag at a time. She is a powerhouse, and I really want to start by just first saying hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. I'm great. What's going on?
Not much.
All right. So I want to dive in here. Lindsay, you said, and I saw an interview because I saw you were going to be on Shark Tank.
Yes.
Your demo tape was incredible, by the way.
You know, I just had too much personality for
that. Too much personality for a Shark Tank. But you said that you want to change the world one handbag at a time. How can a handbag or a person who makes them change the world? Tell these wonderful people.
Here. How many of you guys listen to a song and every time you're going through something emotional and every time you hear that song again, you think back to that time where that memory was, right? Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know, there's one thing as women we all agree upon, and that's fashion. And I was starting to make handbags, but I was never going to be competing with a Louis Vuitton or a Coach. And how could I be different? How could I make a statement? How could I tell a story? And I really wanted to ignite that through my handbag. So I said, if you see a woman in the room with a Louis Vuitton, you might get nervous to go up to her or think, you know, that represents that she's rich or that she loves that brand, or your Vera Bradley girls or this and that. Why not have a bag that represents a conversation starter to bring them up, get a conversation going? So every time someone wears, like, for instance, our bravery bag, they go up to each other, they say, what is your brave story? How can I help you? Can we get lunch? Can we become friends? And it's been out of nowhere. I was just making American flag handbags that were made here in Massachusetts, and people started sharing their brave stories with me. And one story after the next, I was like, I'm going to change this world one bag at a time, bringing women together with the one thing we agree upon is handbags, the conversation starter, the why not every time you see that handbag, you think of all the brave stories behind it and how we can overcome it together, because a lot of women don't think they are brave, but we are all brave and we can all inspire each other, we can all become brave together, and we can all empower each other to fashionably pay it forward by giving back through my handbags.
Awesome, awesome. Now, this is your mom right here, right? Mom, you have a brave bag with you?
Behind you.
Behind you? Can I just see that? Awesome.
Ooh,
hey, don't careful. Worry, I got that. The brave bag. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Thank you.
Here you go, Mom. All right, try that again. See, I have the Tom Brady Uggs on, so I'm not really getting up. So we pick like a social mission. So we talked about like life is good. It was about spreading the power of optimism, that optimism was powerful. And it seems like you've kind of stuck your flag in to say that my social mission is about inspiring bravery.
Yes.
And so how did inspiring and encouraging bravery become your social mission?
Well, I started about when I was 14 selling handbags. And about a year and a half ago, I was in the hole, and I was like, you know, I've been selling bags. I'm not getting anywhere. I had college debt. And I said to my grandma, had just passed away, and she was the Barbara Walters of Boston. And I said, Grandma, give me something. I need to get through this. I'm either going to give up tomorrow or I'm going to go bigger with this. And I woke up with this idea that I wanted to make a mission with the bravery. And the first bag came out, and it honored Boston Medical's catwalk for cancer. And I saw the woman walk down the catwalk with the bravery bags, and I said, wow, now that's a story to tell, overcoming something that's so far bigger than all of us. And then after that, we decided to work with the USO to support the troops. And it's just one story after the next, and it's people relating with one another, whether it's a big or a small bravery that you couldn't pay me about 2 years ago in college to get up in front of 5 girls, but here I am in front of a couple hundred of you all. So I think we all are brave, and I think it's finding that within them and really working it out of them. It's like therapy.
Cool. So, Indra, so can I ask you your brave story?
There's a lot. I mean, I remember when I was in fifth grade, and my principal looked at me, and he said to our graduation class, if anyone tells you can't do anything, just smile and look at them and say, yes, I can. So I looked at my mom, can I sleep over Catherine's? No. Yes, I can. And from there, when everyone told me I couldn't do something again and again and again, and like, how am I going to compete with a Vera Bradley? How am I going to compete with a Coach? You don't know what you're doing. You don't know this and that. And I went to school for fashion merchandising. I started sewing at 6, but I never went by the rule book. I never learned how to make patterns. I didn't care. I didn't want to know. I wanted to do it on my own. And bags had one shape. If I was making clothes, every girl's body is different, and it didn't work perfect. So I kept going, and I decided, you know, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to take something that's so simple, but every woman holds. Every single woman in this room has a handbag, right?
Yep.
So I'm going to use that to give my voice to inspire people that my brave story is that I haven't given up. I won't give up, and I won't give up because I want to help you all. And I want you guys to all have a voice, because every time I get turned down from whether it's a Shark Tank or trying to get a loan for my bank, I mean from the bank for my business, you know, student debt isn't helping me. I don't know if I went to college or if I went to prison because I'm getting confused because no one will give me a chance. So I'm going to be brave and I'm going to overcome and I'm going to keep going. And I'm not going to stop until I have it all.
Awesome, awesome. You know, and it's kind of, definitely. You know, and it's really interesting because when we think of brave stories sometimes, when we think about these big bravery, it's like capital B bravery. You know, like, can I climb this mountain? Can I do this really overwhelmingly difficult thing? But in talking to you, it seems like, you know, you honor and celebrate those little B braveries every day. Sometimes for somebody, it's getting out of bed in the morning.
Right.
It might be raising your hand when you're afraid and your body's trembling because you don't feel comfortable voicing your thoughts. That bravery comes in a lot of different shapes and sizes.
And I don't think anyone ever knows who the person next to them is, and you don't know their story, and a lot of people are very humble and don't want to tell it. But growing up and seeing at such a young age between drug abuse, domestic violence, and all sorts of stuff, that you don't know how alone someone really is, and even the happiest people are the saddest people, and why not use at my booth we have a bravery wall and a postcard you can share your story on. Why not? And it's anonymous, so when you share your story, you're opening the voice and the page for someone else to know that they aren't alone, that they have someone else that's going through this. You don't know who they are, but you know you're not the only one.
Okay. So this is, we have 2 minutes, and I have, I think, an important question, because you know, some folks say, like, well, I mean, you strike me as brave, okay? I mean, you just do. So some people are born, just like some people are born and they're going to grow up, they have a DNA and they're going to be, you know, they're going to grow up to be 6'5". And then somebody else is born and they're going to grow up and they're going to be 5'7", if I'm lucky. But there's also, like, some people are born maybe with a natural propensity for bravery and other people maybe have a harder time, they don't feel brave. In a minute and a half, what advice, or 2 minutes at the most, what advice would you give to a person who was scared to pursue their dreams, that just didn't feel like they had a dream, but they were too scared to pursue it? Is there anything you could tell that person and look out at them, and what advice would you give them?
I'd say go for it. I mean, at the end of the day, when I went for my business, I never worked for anyone. I had no idea what I was doing. And I thought, you know, I'm going to go put all my graduation money into this and start something that I have no idea where it's going. But at the end of the day, I gave it a chance. I tried, and I just built the best resume and network that any girl at my age in my business could have, and gave it a chance. And I taught myself. It's my own graduate school, just without the degree. So I would say definitely keep going. Just go for it. You never know unless you try. Don't give up. I get turned down every day. More than I get turned down by guys, and it's deceiving, but it's like, why stop now? There's way more, and to talk to my customers and hear their appreciation and their stories, that's what keeps me going. Those stories keep me going.
So it sounds like, I mean, there's two things. One, and I've heard, you know, John share this from Life is Good, that, you know, we don't succeed all the time. We had a lot of quote-unquote people call failure. But this idea is, we don't believe in failure, that you either succeed or you learn.
Right.
You succeed or you grow. And you take those challenges, and the only failure, it sounds like what you're saying, the only failure is giving up.
I think
as long as you keep going, we're
on the right track. That's the easiest thing to do, is to give up and not try.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. All right, so we're going to play musical chairs. Greg, how do you feel about coming on over here?
Sure.
Greg, you good?
I'm good.
All right. Thank you for getting over here so quickly. We had a little mix-up in time, and Greg made it here so fast, it's unbelievable.
Bravery is getting on stage in front of hundreds of people, running a beauty company without any makeup or jewelry or anything on. You find out you're on in 4 minutes.
Do you need some water?
I'm good.
Foundation, anything?
Yeah, exactly.
So, Greg, you know, reading about Greg and about Beauty Counter, was a real eye-opening experience. I mean, it's probably going to be very surprising to you guys that I don't use a lot of beauty products. But this idea of how do you get safe products into the hands of everybody and realizing that there are lots of things that the government does not regulate and that we have so many people who are putting healthcare and beauty products into their body, onto their skin, and that they're dangerous. And so not only did Greg, as an entrepreneur, start a company that was about creating full transparency and safe products so that everyone had access to healthy products, but that also was an advocate in creating a movement so that even if people didn't buy your products, they were still going to have the right to safe products and safe skincare. And so thank you so much for what you do. My initial, when I started to read about your work, is like, how did your awareness about this problem, this real issue in the field of health and beauty products, how did this awareness kind of grow into this lifelong, passionate social mission?
So, well, that's a long story, but it's all really started for me back in 2006 when I watched a film called An Inconvenient Truth and became really aware of things that were going on with the earth and became extremely impassioned with the environmental health movement. How many of you in this room have been touched by either cancer, fertility issues, children with asthma, ADHD, severe allergies, right? Pretty much every one of us in this room has been touched by one of these issues, either directly or indirectly. And so when I learned that we were putting toxic chemicals into the products that we were putting in our homes, on our bodies, in our environment every single day, I became extremely focused on doing something about it. And so what was just a personal passion that started with me making swift, you know, sweeping changes in my own household and looking at my home as an environment and myself as an environment, my womb as an environment, that quickly switched to, you know, how can we do something about this? How can we increase awareness around this issue in the country and provide solutions for it?
Awesome. Awesome. Now, you know, I was watching some videos that you've done and listening to some interviews, and you said that as women, when we lock arms, we can move mountains. How do you find people to lock arms with you? And how do you get others to join in and lock arms for social good? Like, I guess in other words, how do you begin starting a movement?
Right. So I began the movement, the Beauty Counter has become, by really trying to educate a few people around me about what was going on. So just to give you a quick few facts, we haven't passed a federal law regulating the cosmetics industry since 1938. The law that exists is 1.5 pages long and allows for many, many toxic chemicals into our products. The EU has banned 1,400 ingredients from all personal care products, of which the United States has banned 11. So probably just sharing those few facts with you, it makes you start to think about, wow, what's actually going into the products that I'm putting on my body every day? So as a person that was extremely passionate, I started to share this message with everyone. I then started to think about, well, what's the solution? How can I create a product line that aims to provide solution to the very issue I just addressed? And I started to build some people with me. But the most compelling way the way that we've really created this movement is that we decided to create a business that sold our products through a network of independent consultants. And we now have 13,000 women across this country selling our products. In 2.5 years, we went from 0 to 13,000. And we did that because of two things. We created an opportunity for people to be entrepreneurial on our platform, but to lend their voices to something that we think is very important. We're asking them to increase awareness by educating everyone around them about these issues so that they can make better and more informed choices for themselves and their families.
Wow, it's amazing. It's amazing. So I'm going to ask you a similar question that I asked to Connie, but since your work, your career is dedicated to a social movement and social good, do you have other things that you do outside of your field that is focused on growing social good?
With all my free time?
With all your free time.
Other than trying to be with my three children when I'm at home. I think I've been, as a human, as a person, I've always been focused on things that are pro-commerce and also, you know, pro-social impact. My belief is that in today's world, you have non-profit organizations and you have for-profit organizations. And I am a person who is very focused on trying to bring the two together. I believe as a country, we'll be significantly stronger if we bring these two things together and we don't allow them to be mutually sort of exclusive anymore. Companies moving forward to, in my opinion, should be thinking about people and planet and profit simultaneously. And so their focus on social impact should be as significant as their focus on creating profit. So when I do things outside of Beauty Counter, I'm very focused on organizations that are obviously advocating for things that I believe in. So I work with the Environmental Working Group. I work with Healthy Child, Healthy World. But I also work with the American Sustainable Business Council and biz NGO companies, organizations who are trying to, you know, increase the number of companies that are focused on, you know, building businesses while having significant social impact.
Awesome. And you had mentioned, you know, about this side, you know, like, hey, I'm doing this, and I have, you have three, you know, beautiful family. And where do you find the time? You know, I think that's this piece of how do you find this work-life balance that people talk about? So I want to throw that out to you. Like, do you have work-life balance? Do you believe in the concept of work-life balance? And what could you tell us about achieving this so-called elusive work-life balance?
Yes. That's a really good question. I'm sure as all of you women are sitting in this room, you're thinking about, oh my gosh, how many things am I going to get done today? Oh my God, the holidays are fast approaching. Did I get the presents? You know, what am I getting in the presents? Who's wrapping the presents? How am I going to get this done with work and everything else? It's challenging as a woman to find that balance. I'm sure everyone on this panel would agree. Sleep is overrated. So one of the ways I find the balance is I don't sleep very much. But I think if you focus on what's really important to you, there are a couple things that I think you can have everything, but I don't think you can have everything all at once. I think you need to prioritize in different periods of your life. I am very much an advocate for women staying in the game, in the workforce, in some capacity, because it allows them a sense of independence, financial and other. It allows you to continue to grow. Even if you're dedicating 5 hours a week to something that you believe in, I think that's really important. I think you can find to be a great mom and a great businesswoman simultaneously, but some things need to give. So for me, I don't do a lot of things socially right now that are outside of the time that I'm spending with my children. I've had a lot of time socializing with my girlfriends over the years. This is probably not the time when I'm doing a lot of it. So I think that is something that I have decided to prioritize. I've tried to find people to support me who are incredibly strong that make my life easier in the areas that I think that I can sort of delegate. And so trying to figure that out. But I think it's, as women, when we give ourselves a break for one moment and say, okay, I don't have to be superwoman every single day. These are the three things I'm going to do really well this day, this week, this month. And the other things can rest for a moment. Once you've accomplished them, then you can go back to focusing on something else, because you can't do it all in one day. I mean, no one on this panel could say that they can. It's challenging. But I think I would encourage you guys to stay in the game. You can focus on your family. You can have great work. You can do a lot of good in the world simultaneously.
You know, it's funny because someone was recently telling me, they were saying, like, this is balance. And the one thing you notice about balance is you don't go anywhere. And that every time you take a step, you get out of balance, and then you regain balance for a second, and then you get out of balance again, and you regain balance. And it sounds like, from what you're saying, that this, it's a process that you have to move. And that sometimes you might be a little bit out of balance. Sometimes you're going to realize, hey, I need more of this. And you're going to make adjustments. You're going to kind of recalculate the route. And is that accurate?
I think that's a fair statement. I think that, you know, everything's constantly changing for me with Beauty Counter. I find that there are days that are good days and there are days that are bad days. You know, when I sit there and I look out at a crowd of women whose lives have been significantly impacted by access to information, access to healthier products, and an economic opportunity that they can take advantage of that is bringing income into their homes, I find that balance in that. I find that balance in the power of empowering women and of joining forces with women who are actually affecting change all the way to Washington. You know, together, you know, so yes, you step in and out, you have good days and bad days, but I think in the end of the day, I'm so passionate about, you know, cosmetic reform. I'm so passionate about safer products getting into the hands of everyone, whether those products are Beauty Counter's or someone else's, because we know ours are not accessible to everyone. I find that balance in just focusing on what I'm doing and being passionate about it, because I think that the work that we're doing is extremely important. But we have bad days. I started with one, right? I'm here on the stage with no makeup.
So
it happened. That would be an unbalanced day for me.
So my wife told me not to ask this question, and I'm going to ask it anyway. Because I'm just curious, and it's a kind of a tough question, but I was thinking, like, it's a little weird.
Give it to me.
I'm going to give it to you because, you know, everything has been going so smoothly
today. Because it's been a good day.
But I was thinking, like, so you have this amazing company, and the company's growing. It's growing, like, you know, 1 year it grew 500%. And then so one thing, you know, you have a company and you're making profits and it's great and it's successful. And then you have this other thing where you're like reforming the health of our nation and being an advocate so that people have access to safe products. And as an end result, we have a healthier society. Do you have to sometimes compromise any? Like, is there, if you had to prioritize one of them, if you say, like, what's more important to you, the success of the business or the success of the social reform? Is that an easy question to answer?
Yeah, for me it's an easy question to answer, but thanks for asking it. For me, I am, as a human, as a woman and an entrepreneur, I believe two things. I believe that we can build a business that's financially rewarding for everyone involved while simultaneously having significant social impact, and we're doing it, and we're doing it very successfully. That said, on a personal level, what I want to see is I want to see a day where my children don't need to worry about reading the labels on the products that they're putting on their bodies every single day. So I am a huge advocate for affecting change in Washington. On a personal level, that's the thing that I care most about, but I have millions of dollars of other people's money. I've created a platform upon which 13,000 lives depend on an economic opportunity, and so I am very focused on making sure that we do both and do both extremely well.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Thank you, Greg. Thank you. Brilliant. And would you mind switching seats with Nadia?
Yep.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. How are we doing so far? Great. Great. So I'm not even going to turn the timer on yet because I'm, you know, you shouldn't be penalized for what I'm about to say about you. So you, does anybody recognize this woman right over here, Nadia Lopez? All right. So Nadia, in some ways, I think, like, and let me know if this is unfair, but I'm, you know, in the trenches of the most challenging work you can do, which is helping a community, a largely disadvantaged community financially, deep levels of poverty, a lot of the issues that affect young people in urban environments, and struggling and fighting every day to make sure that they get a quality education. And then somebody shining a light on you, because somebody seeing one young man saying, this woman, my principal, made a difference in my life, and it kind of changed everything for you. You know, not changed everything, but all of a sudden now people were aware of you and you had a platform that maybe you didn't have before. So I am just, in reading about you, I think about, like, wow, if that, you know, Humans of New York never came out, I might never have read your story. I might never have gotten to hear you speak. I might never have gotten to hear your voice and other people. So I'm really grateful that that story came out. But the work that you've been doing for a long, long time. Yeah. So I'm going to kick right in. And the question that I had for you is that that you were ready to quit.
Yes.
You were ready to resign. You were, as you put it, done.
Yes.
What helped revitalize you? Number first and foremost, and then how do you stay revitalized when you are fighting for a social mission that involves so much rolling up the sleeves, so much battling to make life-changing differences in kids' lives? What revitalized you, and what continues to revitalize you?
So before I answer that question, how many of you in here have felt so overwhelmed and broken in your life? Okay. So that was my story. I probably felt that last night, too, and had to call my mother, because the reality is that as a principal of a school, I'm a leader, and leadership causes isolation. There's a lot of decisions that have to be made, and when you have to make a lot of decisions, there's responsibility that's placed all on your plate. So if my scholars don't do well academically, if my staff isn't feeling at 100%, if we're not making the changes without the money that we need to make the changes, it does not matter. Your name is Nadia Lopez. You are the principal of Mount Hope Bridges Academy, and it is your responsibility. And so you're reminded of all the things that haven't been done that need to be done by yourself. And so I had opened up a school with the mission of closing a prison. In many prisons, because my belief is that too many children think that the only way that they can succeed in life is not living to their fullest potential. And when they don't do that in a community where only 32% of children actually end up going to a high school graduation and only 14%
end up with a bachelor's degree, I am walking into a war zone that's saying that we are in a state of emergency and our children aren't succeeding. But no one cared about that. And so I felt like I was overwhelmed. And I kept asking a lot of people. I have a list, and I remember all the people. And saying, I need help. And it came from administrators who were above me. It came from people who I thought were mentors. And people just believing, like, one, you're a woman. Women do this. Women, this is what you do. And another one, that you're leaders, and leaders push through. And I was just like, I'm having a tough time. So I remember going home and telling my mom, I'm tired. I want to be a mom first. I want my daughter to know that she's the most important thing. I want her to start feeling like I'm fighting for her just like I fight for everyone else's child every single day. So I feel like I'm failing as a mom. I feel like I'm failing this community because they're not changing. They don't see that I think that they are exceptional and brilliant. If they did, this wouldn't feel so hard. I think I'm failing as a principal because my teachers don't feel like their work is impacting, and they are the most amazing group of educators I've ever met. So I'm tired, and I would like to resign, and I have my computer in front of me, and my mom said, you have to pray. And I said to her, I don't want to. And I'm a very faithful person. Like, Sundays, I need just 2 hours. Let me go to church. If I don't go to church, just give me some Joel Osteen. I just need something. And for me to say I didn't want to pray, my mom said, I need you to know that God placed you there for a reason. You were born early. You've always been a fighter. You're a preemie. And so this has always been your story. You have never had an easy story. And so fast forward, and really the story is, I already felt broken from December. It was watching the movie Selma that got me through the first hump, because I said to myself, if Martin Luther King can die for others, if he can represent so many people in a struggle, and he was selfless in doing it, why am I complaining? But I got back to work, and I was like, this is still hard. It's realistic. It's realistic. And so our story was actually told in the New York Times before Humans of New York. It was on December 14, it'll be a year this week, that we were actually featured on the front page of the Metro section. And so when Humans of New York came, people were like, oh my God, this principal. But the irony is that the story, when Vidal said that I was the most influential person, it came on Martin Luther King Day. Yeah. Right, so it even brings me chills. So I know that this work, the reason why I do it, is ordained only because I'm purposed by God himself.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
So you've said, as educators, we try to save the world without acknowledging that we are not always okay ourselves.
Yes.
How do you know when you're not okay yourself? And then with everything that's going on, what are the steps that you take to get okay with yourself?
I mean, it first starts with the crying, right? You're not okay if you're crying. If you find that blood pressure rising, everything is bothering you, every single thing, like everything, then you're not okay. If you're at that place where you're starting to question and doubt yourself, you're not okay. And for me, what I've realized and what I draw upon is that I know that there's a good significant amount of friends, go-to people who will not judge me, who will not criticize me, and will not say, it'll be okay. Because that's the worst thing people say when they don't realize it. It'll be okay. No, you don't understand. If I'm saying it's not okay, it's not okay. So getting through that, and when you also feel like you can't, for me, again, it's relying on the reason why I'm here and praying. So last night I was praying. Right, and because my school, we're going through a lot, and it's about that time again where the emotions run high and go down again. So I would say those things. Know who the people are in your circle, because everybody's not always for you, and everybody is not equipped and have the capacity to support you the way you need, but also draw close to your faith.
Got it. So thank you so much, by the way. Thank you. So...
We have. There's been so much wisdom that's been shared in a short time. And then we have the last 10 minutes of our time to take some questions from you all. So do we have like a handheld mic? Is this something I'm supposed to know?
There's microphones over in each aisle here.
Awesome.
If you have a question, can you just jump up and line up,
up
for those microphones?
And ask a question. We would love to have you.
And while you're doing that, I'm going to give a couple plugs because I know we've gone over and we were told we're going to go over. Please stop by the booths downstairs. We have a few. Lindsay Tia, Life is Good, State Treats, Boston Wins. So please stop by those as well. So let's get started on the questions.
Awesome.
Hi, my name is Colleen. First off, I just want to say thank you. I think you're all fantastic. I have a question for Greg. Skincare products is something I've recently become passionate about. I've started making my own. So I want to know what kind of resources you think I should check out if I want to learn more about different chemicals and things like that. It just sounds like you're really knowledgeable about it.
Well, thank you. One, you're welcome to go to the Beauty Counter site. We have a ton of information on the 1,500 ingredients that we have banned from our products. The Environmental Working Group also has an invaluable resource that all of you should be aware of called the Skin Deep Database. It rates over 80,000 products and can speak to differences in chemicals. And you're welcome to email me, and I'm happy to help you out because we do think that everyone needs safer skincare and cosmetics.
Awesome. Thank you.
Hi. Thank you all so much for sharing your wisdom with us today. I wanted to expand a little bit more on the idea that was raised, corporate versus nonprofit and working together eventually, just that being just the way it is. And this is open to anyone, just from your perspective, if you were going to a company and you wanted to motivate them and help them work towards that goal of corporate responsibility, what would you do? What would the steps that you would take to motivate a company to just become more socially responsible?
I can start on that. I've run corporate social responsibility. I've run many different aspects of this. There are so many ways at work that people can get involved and they can make a difference. It starts by understanding what your passion is. But, for example, we have wonderful groups. I mentioned Sue, who's part of a group of women. And that group gets together and they start coming up with projects that are both good for creating a network and creating a support group internally, but also work externally in the community. And that's created a movement. We took, for example, this is a little thing, and it was an idea that came out of a couple of us senior individuals after Sheryl Sandberg wrote a book, Lean In. So we decided to go around the country and do Lean In groups. And we did them at all of our locations, and each of us took a group, and it was called the Cone of Silence, Safety, a way to really have a conversation. And everybody was invited. It didn't matter about your level or your job or anything. And the conversation, the way people opened up, and the networks that were created, and how they started to connect together, and that all started from an idea and giving something a shot. The book was a catalyst, but it created a conversation that today lives on. So there are so many ways to get engaged, and getting engaged is helping someone else. I love the question you asked earlier about really what you can do in terms of balance and helping others. And a lot of times it's just really recognizing someone who you can open up, bring along, who might be sitting in the background a little bit or afraid to say, and you just welcome them in. Welcome them in, get them started. That little seed can grow into such a wonderful set of capabilities. And whether that's internally or externally, there are so many things companies are doing. A lot of this has to do with the culture of the company.
Can I add one quick thing? I was going to say, I think nonprofit and for-profit, they're just accounting distinctions.
Yes.
They're not about, doing good in the world. So if we stop looking at them like, hey, I have people come in, I want to work for a nonprofit. Well, why? It's like, well, I want to do something good with my life. Well, there are great for-profit organizations, as Greg and what we're showing
you're
of our work here.
Right.
And there's a whole group of companies called B Corporation, like the better B, which put into emphasis people, planet, profit. So that would be a good place to look. They are companies that are focused on triple bottom line. It's a very fast-growing group of companies, and hopefully more and more will join forces with that. So that's another way to look for companies that already have a corporate responsibility, you know, a section within their organization, and maybe go there and learn and then be able to take it. I always find that when you're going into a for-profit business that where it's not something that they're accustomed to doing, if you can show that the return on the investment is still going to be there, that actually if we do good, this is how it will come back to us in a revenue. If the people are only thinking from a revenue standpoint, show them the path to success through your good work, and then they will start to embrace it.
Frankly, the women's group we started for education around women, that was exactly that motivation. It started out with doing good for the people we serve, and it ended up being a movement that now is an integral part of our business.
Awesome.
So I'm sorry to cut it off there, but I just want to thank everyone for coming today. Again, stop by the booths downstairs. Let's give our panelists a big round of applause.